Welcome back. I want to read something quickly in the newspaper on the front page where it says safety first. Weeks after several palm trees were planted on Bronx Beach, they had to be uprooted yesterday after officials discovered they were blocking the view of lifeguards on the popular St. Michael Beach. This was confirmed by Acting General Manager of the National Conservation Commission, Ryan Alves, who recalled that the tree planting took place on January 11th. He said as soon as they realized the trees were blocking the view of the lifeguards, they reached out to nearby property owners, Savoy Development, which recently purchased land from the Barbados Tourism Investment Inc. When contacted, Director Alan Kinch said after they were informed of the issue, they started to remove the trees. I'm not quite sure why these trees would be there. Why are we blocking the beaches? According to my friend Gabby, that beach is mine. And we want to make sure we still have windows to the sea and not everything should be blocked. So I wanted to share that because I know people like Gabby are actually very passionate about these things. And there's a whole movement going on about protecting our beaches and what belongs to us, what belongs to the property owners. We know of an old law that actually speaks about up to the watermark belongs to the property owner, which means that anything behind the building that is beach, by law, is really supposed to be theirs. But anyway, we're going to take this call. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. This is Tony Carter, Gabby. Most honorable.
I gotta get it right. The most honorable, sir. Yeah. Gabby, my friend Carter. How are you?
I am here. How are you?
I am very good, thanks. I think you might be happy with this news I just read. Funny enough, you called and I just called your name. The trees have been removed. They were planted on Bronx Beach. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's clear that whoever put those trees there did not do it with the understanding that it would be accepted by the Barbadian people. They went between the hours of 12 and 1:30 in the 12 of midnight and 1:30 the next morning, a.m., to plant adult trees on the beach to block the view of the lifeguard. Because if you're looking to the south, the lifeguards could not see if people were being in there in case of any difficulty and so on. And that was ridiculous. But furthermore, I want to make it abundantly clear that we are not going to tolerate nonsense like that from anybody. I don't care if they own the land, if they're claiming they have the right to bring their property on high water mark. Those things are irrelevant. NCC has dictation and control over all beach lands in this country. It is very clear. So that old, archaic British law, I should say archaic as opposed to old, that was designed and that was established, that was made law to suit England. It's a law that has nothing to do with us at all. But what happened, these property owners decided to exploit the fact that it was an old British law, of which we shall remove very soon, so that that the Barbadian people would have the right and the privilege to bathe on that beach. And when I say that beach, I mean inclusively and collectively that beach, because the beach belong to we. It is very simple. And this government is not going to make fun with that. That is a nonsensical behavior again. I love that word nonsensical. I've said it on this program 3 times now. And not only that, it's unfair. Because what happens, if you knew Bronx Beach, for example, Bronx Beach was a no beach when I was a boy. The water would wash up on the wall and so on. We had no beach. Mm. Over a period of years, it became a beach and keep extending itself. A lot of that has to do with some of the groins that were put on the south coast for other hotels to obtain beach or to create beach or beaches. So Bronx Beach benefited from it in that way because the currents changed and the waterways and all of that. These people kept bringing their property down to the high water mark. And one of the reasons why I had told the late Jack there, who was a very prominent lawyer who had represented a lot of those beach properties. He has to change his mindset on that. And he said to me, you know, Gabby, you know, it's not me, it's the law. I said, but Jack, I want to tell you something. I do not respect the law at all, unless it has justice in it. And that law don't have no justice. Because what you're really doing is depriving our Barbadian people from building on our beaches. And people of your elk had already removed us from the plantation lands and put us on the beach because they felt like the beach lands were of no use. Mm-hmm. But it's only with the advent of tourism that y'all decided, oh, these beaches are not just any good. They're really, really good. And we could run these people again. And so you started your game. First of all, those who own lands had started to make it very expensive for us, mm-hmm. who were renting from these people to own these lands. And now beach land is the most expensive property or lands in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
So then you started the program with the tourism and so on, and then we started see emerging from about maybe 8 to 10 years ago the augmentation of umbrellas and beach chairs on the beaches to the point where, let's say, a beach like Browns Beach is saturated with umbrellas and chairs. And yet they have people mm-hmm. who own properties that would tell us that we have to go on a wristband to go and bathe on those beaches, especially that Browns Beach, a particular sector or section of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think that should stay as it is. So that man with those coconut trees, mm-hmm. who bought that property from the government for $1.5 million, I want to let him know that that's wrong and unfair, and that he's trying to exploit a law in his favor, but that he will not be successful. And that's why I'm glad that Minister Prescott and his team
mm-hmm.
have
took
successfully
action.
Removed mm-hmm. those coconut trees.
Well, I want to say well done, too, because I know how you feel about things like this. Any more comments pertaining to any more beaches that we know that you may be coming forward to speak on, whether it be development or otherwise? Because I know that you...
Well, I can tell you that mm-hmm. there are certain properties that hear what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They put their signs way beyond their boundary mark and says private property or no trespassing and so on. When they know that their properties don't extend to that degree. And their reasoning is that these fellas will be coming selling drugs, and therefore, if you put the sign way beyond our property, they're not going to come behind it because they do not know where the watermark ends or where the actual property ends.
But
right?
Let me ask you a question, Gabby. You're against chairs and umbrellas completely, or you're saying to put them in a particular section and allow for some space for cricket?
And stop blocking at the beach because,
yeah.
Look, I said it before.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Garfield Sobers,
mm-hmm.
Sir Les Hall, Sir Frank Worrell, I call all the stars first, Sir Gordon Greenidge, Sir Charles Griffiths, and then we could come Malcolm Marshall, Sylvester Clark, Ezra Mosley. These are great West Indian players. Simone Nurse, all of them played beach cricket. Raul Branca, all of them played beach cricket. And today, on most beaches in Barbados, you cannot play beach cricket. And something has to be done about that. I'm not totally against no chairs or no umbrellas. I've seen it since the 60s when I used to work at Paradise Beach, which my friend Dennis used to work at too. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I used to work with the boats, with Captain Carlo Water Sports. So I was the singer and the crew, meaning I was also singer and the person who can save the people if they're getting difficulties where they go swimming out there and so on. And had to be the one who had to row the boat to get the rampant and the food and all that. So I don't know if this is just as a song or something like that. My grandfather was a fisherman. I spent my whole life on the beach. I objected to the fact that they had destroyed the only brown sand beach in Barbados down by the reef,
mm-hmm.
down off Fontainebleau.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been fighting this fight for all of my life. And we have got to understand that, yes, there's places for chairs and so on, but not as it is right now. It is really an overkill, to put it mildly.
Well, I can tell you this, Gabby. This is why you are now the Honorable Sir Anthony Gabby Carter. You are not only talented, but you are great. And you will not only be remembered for your music, but you will be remembered for your greatness. And you remember that Joanne Haig told you that. And I got to come and join you.
Because you're my friend. You know,
we are friends. And if I got to join you on the beach, don't mind, I can't swim. I can still go down there and make sure that we fight the good fight together, my brother. All right?
Joy, I'm listening. Tell me, girl, that you cannot swim. But I'll tell you this. I know a swimmer they call Dennis. He's a man, let me tell you, don't give a damn. He's a master when it comes to talking program. And I will tell you something else you could guarantee. I glad to be here on VOB.
Love it. Thank you, Gabby. Thank you so much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Jaya.
Good morning. Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah. I would like to speak to you about greening the economy. Mm-hmm. But first, I would like to respond to the caller who spoke about people weeding the road and leaving the debris at the side of the road. Now, recently, they were weeding the road down by me. And I saw the workers, they were traveling with some large garbage bags. So they placed the debris in these garbage bags and left them at the side of the road. I don't know if the sanitation collected the bags or they came back later to the truck and collected the bags. But it was very tidy.
Yeah, but then, okay, but you said you don't know if anybody came back.
No, I told you, I don't know if they left the debris there for the sanitation or they came back, but the bags were no longer there.
Oh, they were no longer there. My apologies. Next morning. Okay, okay.
So that means that once the debris was in the bags, they didn't have a thing to be scattered up. So I don't know which division of government that was or not, mm-hmm. but I think it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and where was this again? You would see
this was in Bank Hall.
Bank Hall. Well,
that was about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, only this morning I saw people weeding the road, and I'm going to count the days now because I and see how long it would be there. Now, don't get me wrong; we can't blame the workers.
But I don't know why these workers. I mean, they're the first time I saw it because people had weeded the road already, mm-hmm. and they didn't have these garbage bags. But I don't know if it's a new initiative now or not. Mm-hmm. But well, I think it was very good. Okay.
It would make sense. Yeah, I think so too. It would make sense to put it in a bag.
How long the debris remains there, once it's in the bag, nobody is going to burst the bags, so it won't scatter all of it there.
Well, okay. Well, we'll see if that's the new norm, if that's what they're going to do. But I saw some this morning, as I said, people weeding the road, and I don't want people to feel that we're blaming those who actually weed the road. They're doing their job, but someone else has to come and remove the debris. It's not for them to do. They put it all and stack it up in piles. The problem is that it remains there for too long.
I don't know if they could get in contact with the other department that did the weeding down here and mm-hmm. get their garbage bags.
Well, I guess we'll have to see what happens if we can hear from somebody responsible to see if this is the way that they're doing it. And and if it is, we commend them. Okay?
All right, well, I'm greening the economy. Mm-hmm. Now, I would suggest that 10% of all the vehicles imported into the island for this year be electric vehicles. And this be extended every year until 2030. We will only be importing electric vehicles.
That basically was the news from the Ministry of Transport. that July 20. No, I'm actually saying I heard. I think
that's
it's
a suggestion
July.
That I'm putting out.
No, but I'm
right
saying
there.
That the Ministry of Transport, the minister, forgive me, I was just reading up on something here. They spoke about bringing in buses. I think
I'm
they should
not
be here.
About buses. I'm talking about all vehicles being imported into the country.
No, but what I was trying to say is I'm trying to find out here when I was just making reference to vehicles being coming in. And if they're electric buses, if all of them will be electric buses, I was just trying to figure that
out. I'm not speaking about the buses. I'm talking about cars, trucks,
vehicles. Right. That's what I'm saying. I was just making a reference to the buses being part of vehicles.
They're bringing in 20-something electric buses or something.
I'm just trying to find the article. No, what I'm trying to tell you is that if that is so and they get them here, it may be the start of what we may see as a change out in bringing in the vehicles you speak of. Two electric vehicles. So I was just trying to find that article.
No, I'm saying that from this year, 10% of all the vehicles imported into the country should be electric vehicles. And every year going forward, 10% more would be included until in 2030 we will only be importing electric vehicles.
Understood. I understand you. I think we just crossed a little bit where I was just making it, showing you that government was moving in that direction by starting with the buses. And obviously by 2030, we want to be carbon free in terms of the green economy, using more solar, less fuel. And that is the direction that the government announced. So I just wanted to make reference to the start of what I heard the minister saying, where we're bringing in buses, and I'm sure to bring it down to 2030 into us using less carbon, less fuel, more greening spaces, more solar to sort of lower our carbon footprint is the direction I believe the government is going in. Okay, any other remarks? No? Thank you so much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I want to bring the discussion back to the question of the beaches, and more specifically, Browns Beach. The last person who made a contribution in that regard was Dr. Gabby. Mm-hmm. And it is obviously a very important subject. Now, I want to bring your attention to something that happened to me quite recently. And that is that I went to Browns Beach with a group of friends and family. We were probably somewhere between 10, 15 people, and we just went to enjoy the day at the beach. And we took along a 10 by 10 tent, a small tent, fits into the back of a car easily. We erected it. It needs no support, basically, because it's just a small structure that provide shade for a few people while you enjoy the beach. And I was told by a ranger that we could not have a tent there because we first needed to have permission from the NCC. So we would have needed to go to the NCC and get a permit to have a tent of any description. Nevertheless, beach umbrellas were allowed. So the next time we were having a picnic, because we do that fairly regularly, I went to the NCC, and I was told that, yes, you can get a permit, but that would cost you $235.
Wow.
So just to have a little shade, just to erect a bit of shade over a family gathering, we have to go in advance to the NCC, pay them $235, to erect a 10-by-10 tent on a beach. I think that is grossly unfair. Now, I can understand that the NCC would wish to make some revenue because they have a lot of expenses. They have the cleanup. They have all kinds of things there. So I don't have an issue with that if you have a commercial venture. So if somebody is having a commercial activity and they're erecting tents on the beach or on property adjacent to the beach, such as the Esplanade. I can understand that NCC would require that some sort of payment is made. But for an ad hoc beach picnic, I think it is grossly unfair. And this all plays into the whole question of the youth at the beach, specifically there at Browns Beach, because as Gabby mentioned, within the last 10 years, there has been a proliferation of beach umbrellas. And the locals who previously enjoyed the use of that beach are being pushed further and further to one end or squeezed into a very small area where the water breaks. Because, as was mentioned before, we are allowed to go to the high water mark, but I don't know what the difference between the high water mark is and where the mark where the waves actually break, because that mark, the latter moves according to the tide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, added to this, we recently read of a proposal by the, I think it's the Tourism Investment Corporation, to attract investment for 6 or more new hotel properties within the Bridgetown area. And this will obviously have a fundamental impact on Browns Beach, because once the Hyatt goes up with a whole set of additional umbrellas in front of their property, the other umbrellas which are erected now primarily targeting the cruise guests, those will be pushed further up, and there'll be nowhere for the Bajan, so for the local.
Mm-hmm.
So the beach access is becoming, the available beach access is becoming less and less for locals, and soon it will be no more. And this is something that we must be concerned about. Now, I can understand that the Tourism Investment Corporation would be looking to attract investment. That's their mandate. It is nice for people to put up these architectural drawings and, you know, giving impressions of what could be there and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot continue with these high-rise, large-volume projects, at the expense of the locals. And wherever you put properties on the beach now, there's going to be some impact. There's currently discussion about the new hotel or the expansion that's going on at Ocean 2, with a proposal, I understand, for a 9-story hotel there on a very, very small beach. And the adjacent hotel and the residents around there are complaining, and unnecessarily so. They're protesting because it means that there will be far less space available for the current users of that beach.
Can I ask a question? How do you propose, and I'm asking you your opinion, we need development, of course. We are tourism based. We need to make our money, obviously, from tourists. So we want to make sure that we have hotels, etc. We have access to the beach for locals as well as tourists. But how do we balance it? If we don't put them up, then the beach tourism aspect may sort of fall. We may have to look at what we call green tourism, which would be more the country, and you know, nobody's really developed that as much. Everyone is more looking at the beachfront properties. But what I'm asking is, when you said we need to be concerned, and we should, but we need to balance it, because we can't not do it, but we still have to be careful how we do it. Is that what you're saying?
I agree that we don't want it to happen. I agree that we need to balance it. I'm not saying that it shouldn't happen, but there must be limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only balance something if you create a limitation at one end or at one point, and have some development on another. Now, mm-hmm. The Hyatt hotel at that point, I mean, okay, that can go ahead. But mm-hmm. we must ask a question, how much more can be allowed on that beach? The additional hotels that are being, I mean, what, when the old mobile tanks are knocked down, you can potentially put another 10-story hotel there with quite a fairly large footprint, which means another 400, which could mean potentially another 400 to 600 people on that beach, or it could be a convention center, which provides commercial activity, tourism-related commercial activity, without having a direct impact on the beach.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about building more hotels? Because we used to have some place called Villanova. I think that was in St. John. And we don't really have any hotels, any major tourism going on, in my opinion, in the countryside. I know there's a place called Peg Farms, I think, is in St. Joseph. And they normally have a lot of tourists there and with vegetables, and they show you all the animals. But I find that we need to promote that more, because if we don't, we're not going to have a lot of space left on the beach to build anything. And then we're going to want more tourists to come. And we may have to start promoting that kind of green tourism, where we're looking more at the countryside. We have a lot of gullies and walks. Why can't we just build nice little log-looking cabins in the middle of the gullies somewhere, so people can go on those nature walks, etc.? I think we need to start developing more that type of tourism and not interfere with the beaches anymore. If we can, sort of just leave the windows to the sea that we have and not hide them up. That way we still have construction. We can still create jobs, but we're still protecting the beach as much as we possibly can. I don't know what you think about that.
Yes, let me give my perspective on that. There's a very good reason why we don't have inland hotels, mm-hmm. and a very practical reason. And that is that when people come to Barbados, Barbados has some of the most beautiful beaches to be found anywhere in the world. And when people pay a lot of money, because it is very expensive to come to Barbados, they want to come and stay at the beach. It's as simple as that. So having an inland hotel is nice. It will be necessarily a low cost hotel, because it will attract people who are looking to spend as little as possible. Because the people who can afford a more expensive stay will want to be at the beach. That does not rule out the development of inland tourism, and we have been going in recent years in the right direction, developing these the walks and all the other ancillary attractions that you mentioned, and these are necessary, and these are the sorts of things mm-hmm. that keep Barbados well ahead of the competition, mm-hmm. because Barbados has an offer that yes. is easily much better than anything that can be had elsewhere in the region. Mm-hmm.
I think we can package it, in my opinion, as a full experience. I don't think we should only promote Barbados as a beach destination. There are other places that I must say that have some better beaches than Barbados, so to speak, in terms of sand and all over the world. But I think that if that's part of the promotion, I really feel that inland hotels, as you call it, I call it green tourism, I feel that we can encourage people to build near the springs and spring baths and so on and so forth. There's a lot that the country has to offer in that regard. But thanks very much for your contribution. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. One WhatsApper here says, "You're right, Joanne. I think that inland offerings would be great. I would go." This person obviously is from overseas. "Even the staycations would like it, because everything these days is about the environment and green spaces and not leaving your carbon footprint," they're saying. And truthfully, we need to build on that. If we are talking about planting a million trees, and we're in the process of doing that, and we talk about cleaner environment, we're talking about putting more trees down to take the carbon out of the atmosphere, putting more oxygen in, we then need to promote green tourism to go along with that. We don't need to be on the beaches anymore. I remember I don't know when, I told Gabby I can't swim, which is true, but it doesn't mean I don't go to the beach. But ask yourself, when was the last time you saw a seashell? I remember collecting so many seashells on the beach. I can't find a seashell. And if you see seashells are selling by vendors on the beach, they're normally coming from some other country and being pawned off as from Barbados, but it really isn't. So I'm hoping that the powers that be really look into the green spaces that they're talking about and utilize them to build some hotels, go into the gullies. Let's see if we can have some construction going out there. Get the tourists to come and plant a tree if that's part of it, to add to the million. You know, so that's the direction that we're all heading in. And that writer from WhatsApp, I want to say kudos back to you for being so visionary about that situation and that suggestion, rather. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air.
Good morning, Miss Egg. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Yeah, I good. Yesterday, while listening to Brass Tacks, I smelled something burning. I called one institution, government institution, which will remain nameless, and they told me that they was going to send some person to see, at least to find out what it was that was coming, because I couldn't breathe. I had to shut all the back party house and use a fan in order to breathe. I also called the fire service, and they told me, as long as they see smoke, call the number. I called 311, got no response. It's only this morning now that a guy that lived up the road came and told me, man, you don't know it was so-and-so appealing that was burning. About 5 or 6 posts and the fencing, the logs and thing burned. What I'm saying is that if some person, that was about 3 hours after, I think the guy told me a tire was burning, that's what was giving me the noxious fumes. If an alert neighbor or some person didn't see that and that had came around burning and started the house, there are 4 houses. Well, my way live is the last. So there is 2 that were going to get burning up before they get to me. But all of that could have been avoided.
Mm-hmm.
And 311 is not working. They don't know if there's a new number for the fire service, but call 311 and that is not working. So if there's a new number for the fire service, I would like it on here so that people can get it and write it down. Because the fire service number we call was the airport number. That's
well,
the
no, I'm actually going to, this is strange, I'm using a cell phone. We're calling it now. I'm calling on the cell. Let's see.
Barbara's Festival, good morning.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry I had to hang up there, but I'm sorry, sir. I wanted to check that on air. That
well,
is working.
I called that yesterday. I didn't call that this morning again.
Well, I just, you know, I just wanted to be very careful because, and I had to prove a point because,
of course.
And Dennis actually is saying he tried just now too. He got through. So, and we did it live on air because we wanted to make sure that people knew that the fire service is readily available.
All right.
Okay. I'm not sure if your phone it was working. But
morning, I called that number. They can check and see my number.
We're not saying not, but we just wanted to assure the Barbadian public that 311 is actually working. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to add to your contribution?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that you know the first institution that government institution I called, they should have came, but they didn't come, so I call them the name though.
Hmm.
Thanks, anyway.
Thank you so much for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
No, I'm not too bad, you know. I was listening as they do every day. Sometimes they try to get through, and they take you an hour or more holding on, but thank God I'm able to get
we
through.
We do apologize.
You, I ain't worried about that. All that's a game of living. If you want something bad enough, you're hanging until you get it. Well, I mainly called because I heard the subject about the guy wanting 10% of the electric cars to be imported in this country. A friend of mine had a Camry, 7 years old. It's electric car. And he wanted a battery for it. You heard what I tell you, a battery. It took him hell of a time to get a battery. Now, he has money. He could afford to buy the battery. He could bring in the battery. But the company here had to delay a while to get the battery because the first battery was not the correct one. But you can imagine paying $20,000 for a battery.
Wow.
No, I'm poor. I ain't got no money. I'm working for $10 a day. Just an example. I'm working for $200 a week. And my work entails me maybe running up and down with my vehicle. Is it making much? It's using gasoline. Now, I'm going to get me a $150,000 car, which is electric. I go to St. Somewhere's or Toyota, and I bring this $150,000 or $200,000 car that is electric. I'm paying the bank about $1,200 or $1,500 for this car every month. At the end of 7 or 8 years when this battery goes down, because I'm putting in gas every day, maybe $100 every week if so much. At the end of 7 or 8 years, I need a battery for $20,000 or $30,000, $25,000, whatever. Where am I going to get this money from to buy this battery? You don't think it's cheaper for me to be buying gas? I can find the gas every week, maybe if I can't find a bar until I get around to giving that person back. I'm poor. Imagine I'm from the poor class. This is an example. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking for the guy now who does not have that facility to accommodate him an electric car. The electric car battery is going to cost him $20,000 or $30,000. That has nothing to do with the car that runs the battery. The other battery that runs the car, you know. Because this one battery for that purpose.
Yeah, but what is the shelf life for that battery?
That is what we don't know. And I've known two or three people who had vehicles with less than 10 years that are electric cars and had to buy batteries. If you understand me, because he has to go off refinance that loan now. He ain't done pay yet.
Because if you say something is $20,000, then we have to look at the shelf life and if it can be recharged and how often. Is it
but
20 years?
The recharging comes from the vehicle itself when it needs that maintenance recharge every 2 days or every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you charge it just like how you would normally have to charge it. But then when the battery goes, even if it's 15 years, where is the poor man going to find $15,000 to buy a battery?
Mm-hmm.
When he would have been buying gas all the time. And if, yes, I agree, we should be going green. What do you think Guyana now get the opportunity to drill
to
more
sell oil? And sell oil.
What do you don't think we should drill more oil? Because we're talking about greening. We all talking about greening. Greening is money. Everybody, we want the green. Yes, I have no problem with green. But the problem here is that if you're poor, you remain poor. The greening is to enrich or make the bigger guy, the guy with the money, richer.
Why would you say that? Out of curiosity. Just out of curiosity. Go ahead.
Listen to me carefully. Mm-hmm. You see how many Swiss on the road? Out of every 10 cars you meet on the road, you're going to find at least 6 Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be secondhand or brand new. Wait. Because you could have gone at Simpson Motors and no down payment and get a balloon and pay for this vehicle. At this 8 years, you don't pay for it, then they'll give you the balloon, whatever you finish paying for it, you got a mm-hmm. Swift. You can go to any one of the dealers out here who bring in and import secondhand mm-hmm. Swift, and you can get them reasonable. First thing, they work good, they have enough room, and everybody now got a Swift. So there's so many Swifts on the road because it's economical mm-hmm. to have it. The gas is not very, very, very heavy in drinking gas. And two, you can get the parts, and three, they work very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, show me these guys now that barely able to find this $600 or $700 every month to pay for a car, can find $1,500 to pay for an electric car. You understand where I'm coming from? It's all good and good. We saying that we want green. Yes, we ain't got no problem with it. But the small man cannot afford it. The guy who has a few $100,000 put down once, they can afford it. Because when the battery goes, he can buy a battery. The fella know that his battery got on, but he got no switch that is 7 or 8 years old, and the battery got on. He got to park it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go and take up $15,000
to buy a battery? I guess we will have to find ways and means, and we're hoping eventually that it will be cheaper. Because it's better for the environment, but you have a point. How can we, the average person, afford an electric car? Similarly, how can the average person afford solar panels to come off the grid? And you know, because the investment is a big investment, but it's long-term savings. But you need to find that upfront money, which in a lot of people don't have. And I understand what you're saying. However, we do want cleaner air. And I guess we'll have to balance it if they bring in some electric for those who can't afford. Those who can't afford continue. And then we all plant trees in order to take the carbon emissions out of the atmosphere is the way that you may have to. And it may sound jokey, but it's a fact. If we can't go to 2030 where we can take all of the cars off the road and go solar and 100%, which I don't think we can do by 2030 because it's a lot. We can get there, but we will have to be planting more trees, using less plastics. There's some other things that you can do to balance this off. But I do understand what you're saying. A lot of strips on the road, they're reasonable, and not everybody can afford an electric car in that regard. So I understand what you're saying. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air. Good morning. I'm racing the time, I guess. Good morning, 11:32. You're on the air. Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Joanne. I just want to add to some bit what the gentleman was just saying.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Did we lose that call? Okay. Let's try another one.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're back.
Yes.
I think it's your phone.
Yeah, I think it's...
Dennis didn't touch anything. His hands were in the ear.
Okay. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't play the fool again.
Okay.
His concern is genuine and it is taken. But the truth is that we have to set a target and move towards the goal. Now, the truth is that worldwide, batteries are becoming cheaper. They're also lasting longer. There's actually evidence of a battery doing 1,000,000 miles. Granted, this is of a particular make of battery mm-hmm. and particular type of car. And all of the manufacturers of batteries and electric cars at the moment are not, let's say, up to par with the same technology. But
can I ask a question? Someone is saying here a battery in a hybrid should last over 10 years depending on environmental conditions. Do you have any information?
Yes, it all depends on environmental conditions, depending on how hot the country you're running it in, whether you leave your car sitting in the sun, whether you're in a cold climate, whether the car has appropriate technology to pre-warm the battery, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the truth is that the reality is that the key for us, and we're talking about the entire world, is mass transit. The solution is not in each individual owning a car. That is not the solution. The solution is in mass transit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the solution is not in a car that has six people living in it, all six have cars. That mm-hmm. is not the solution.
Mm-hmm.
But for his concern, I'm saying that as more manufacturers come online and start building up what they call gigafactories, which produce a lot of batteries, the cost of the batteries are going to drop tremendously.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Right. As well as other technologies that are going to come online that will allow us not to have to own a car because there will be ride-sharing, you know, with artificial intelligence, there will be self-driving, all of these things. So it is a target. It is not for us to go out and...
You know that Barbadians listening, some Barbadians, not all, some Barbadians listening to you. And I'm saying, let's say they say... And what he talking about, six people in my house, all of me want a car individually because I want to go and do my thing. It's a way of having to educate. It's a lot of changes then we would have to make in order for people to accept. Because that's not, as that guy said, and I could listen to him, he's saying, listen, I don't work for that kind of money. I can only afford a Swift. You know, so when you keep hearing that and that's happening, it's going to take longer.
But listen, a lot of it is, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of it is people not having information that is right at their fingertips as well. I bet if you ask most people, they cannot tell you how much money in gas they put in their car a year. But in 10 years' time, it's $50,000. $50,000 at $100 a week is $50,000. You know, so there are all of these components, but the truth is that, okay, for instance, let's say one manufacturer, which I consider to be the leading manufacturer of electric cars worldwide, mm-hmm. which is Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
His the co-founder, the CEO, there was a question about making a cheaper car, and his argument was, we're not going to make a car cheaper than $30,000. because once we have the appropriate amount of cars on the road, self-driving technology, those who can't even who can only afford a bicycle will be able to hail a ride on the car and get where they're going without having to expend that money.
This is the new thinking. How many years did you calculate that? Again, you said it's $100 a week over how many years to make it 50,000?
Over 10 years.
Right, over 10 years. What I'm saying to you, and
that's
average. All right, but let me just speak on behalf of the poor man here now, all right? let me do the higher purchase kind of mentality, because that's what we can afford. The
right.
reason we don't buy things in cash is because we don't have the cash. So for us, $100 in gas a week is easier than looking for $50,000 or $20,000 right away to get a battery or to buy an electric car. So understand that it's not even about a mentality. It's about our reality. That's all we can afford.
I understand that. I fully understand that. What I'm saying to you is that, and this is something that I practice.
Mm-hmm.
We have one car in our house.
Mm-hmm.
One car. If we clash and we have other things and it's going to clash and we can't drop off and pick up and all this kind of thing, then you know what we do? I would take a taxi or a bus or hire a car for a day.
No, I understand that, but
understand?
I don't know. Yeah,
so
I understand you, but I'm just trying
to
say.
We have to start moving our thinking towards mm-hmm. these kind of things.
I agree. But sir, let me just say, I only said that when we talked about the calculation of monies and having to find monies
up front. I'm saying that over 10 years, this is the kind of money you would have put out. And a lot of people on a daily basis or monthly basis, yearly basis, might not check that calculation.
No, they don't. You know why? Because a higher purchase like agreement sounds good. It's only sometimes when people go like, wait a minute, this item is $1,200, but I just gave this company after 2 years, $3,000. The point is, a lot of people don't do that calculation. It's more money to do things in the way like that monthly and chip away at it because of the interest. So, but the what I'm trying to say in general, HP mindsets of piece here and a piece there and a piece there is more middle and lower income thoughts.
Yeah, and that's why I said to you, see, over time, they're going to get more manufacturers. Well, actually, I somehow believe that half of the major legacy car manufacturers won't be around in 20 years because they're moving too slow. They're dragging their feet. And I understand why they're dragging their feet. You just must understand that there's a whole machinery in place for what they call ICE engines, which is internal combustion. At the moment, there are parts, there are people who, because they have separate manufacturers. Car manufacturers don't manufacture all their parts for the cars that they make. Mm-hmm. They have outside companies that provide those services. So there's a whole industry that if they decide to jump right into the electric car industry head on, there's a lot of people that would be going out of business. And this is one of the reasons why they're dragging their feet.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that we're moving to a place in time where we need to do this.
Well, I think we need to start with the carpooling, as you said. Maybe we could...
Carpooling, the electric buses, all these mass
system.
Transit is really the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to have to let go of our belief that we need to all own a car and participate in ride sharing, catching the bus. I agree that
walking a little bit
needs to be improved. Walking, all these things.
Wow.
You know, we say we can't walk, but we go away and go to a mall and walk the entire day.
Oh, Dolphin Park, right up and down in every store, and do it again. But it's true.
You know?
I have a friend. He's listening now, and I also a former colleague of mine, Dr. Mwanza at Water 30. They have these hikes. And needless to say, I haven't been on them yet, but I plan to. But most of us don't like to walk sometimes, even to drive. And I am guilty of this, and I am ashamed to make this confession, but I will. You go to the supermarket, and you're looking for the closest park. You don't want to park too far. So you circle and you circle until you get the closest park to it. I mean, needless to say, I have to start changing that. But there are a lot of people, if they can park their vehicles in their office and just get to the desk, would want to do that.
I would make an argument to say that anybody who could open a supermarket where you could drive in and pick the stuff off the shelf while you're driving would definitely make a lot of money.
No, but I'm saying we got to change that mindset. It's true. And as I said, I'm one of those persons guilty of driving, you know, to the closest part I could find.
Right.
And I need to stop that. And I will, now that I've declared my hand publicly. But even though in Bridgetown, with the transformation, you know, we're hoping to see that no cars eventually would go into Bridgetown. You can have sidewalk cafes like they do in most cities, and you park on the outskirts and you walk in.